Everybody calls and say Alliance.
Could someone you know use a little extra comfort right now? Alliance Heating and Air is proud to team up with Lennox to bring Feel the Love to our community, a special program providing free heating and cooling systems to homeowners in need. A simple nomination can make a big difference. Nominate today at homecomfort.org or call 2212-642 Alliance Heating and Air, because everybody calls us 2212-642.
Hi friends, R.C. here from Tobacco and Brew, sharing this month's Cigar of the Humidor. H. Upman Sunrise. Grown, fermented, and aged at the A.J. Fernandez factory, this stick is medium in body, offering an Ecuadorian Connecticut seed wrapper, along with robust, hand-selected Nicaraguan long filler. Notes of coffee, cedar, and nuts make this a perfect cigar for any time of day. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
We need a book that tells the whole story, you know, because there's all kinds of books, but like one book that tells everything in it. So you can get it in the 250th year. You can get the story and know the story and live the story.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Eric Metaxas, author of the new book, Revolution, The Birth of the Greatest Nation in the History of the World. We go in-depth with Eric on that book in just a few moments. Later on today's program, Batya Ungar-Sargon. She is the host of Batya on News Nation, and her new book is The Jews and the Left. We'll talk with her later on in today's program. First, pleased to be joined now by Eric Metaxas, the author of 7 New York Times bestsellers. You can find more on his website, and he's here today to talk about the brand new book, Revolution, The Birth of the Greatest Nation in the History of the World. Eric, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be here, and I want to be clear from the title, I'm not talking about Belgium or Holland, just want to be clear up front.
That's good. Our listeners need to make sure they know what we're getting into here today. It's a wonderful read that tells our story, the nation's story, the story of revolution, so crystal clear. I loved it. You say early on, citizens who formed this nation must be aware of the events of its conception and the birth of the United States. Why is it so important that we know this story, even today, 250 years after it happened?
Well, not just even now, but especially now, now more than ever, there is nothing like the United States of America. That there's no hyperbole in that. Again, this doesn't mean that we're better, the people are better. There's simply nothing like a nation which looks to God. All the founders understood this, and thereby is able to govern itself. We're able to govern ourselves. We don't need a king like the other nations. I mean, you have to go back to the Sinai Covenant to the Israelites leaving Egypt and saying, you know, we're going to look directly to God and therefore we can govern ourselves. It's a wild idea in history. It's unprecedented until you come to America. And in the 1770s, you have a group of men who sense that they're not going to put up with the tyranny that they feel. They're trying to be civil about it, but they're not going to put up with it. They feel compelled not to put up with it, I should say. They compel for religious reasons and reasons of deep principle. And so what happens is simply unprecedented to say that we are going to be independent of Great Britain, that we are going to be dependent on, you know, another sovereign. That story is just so wild. I mean, the fact that we came into being in 1776 never should have happened. So the story of it now more than ever, we need to understand how it happened and understand that there really has never been a nation like this. And I think that, you know, we would love it if others around the world would look to us and say, like, what do you have? How do you do that? Because we would like that here. But we need to appreciate that, you know, in a way that we simply can't appreciate it unless you know our story.
I want to ask about Adams because I think it might be the very first story as you begin to, in this revolution before revolution about James Otis and this trial in 1761, and Adams is watching and listening. And then there's a whole chapter about John Adams being this prophetic person. So is he truly the engine of this effort, John Adams?
I think so. I think so. I think that the two indispensable figures are George Washington and John Adams. I don't think anybody can compare. There are many, many great, great figures. Joseph Warren, John Hancock, Paul Revere. You can go down the line, Samuel Adams. There are these figures that are just extraordinary, and we need to know their names. Henry Knox, Nathan Hale. These are amazing heroes. But John Adams should be 1,000 times more famous than Thomas Jefferson. It's kind of a bizarre thing in history that we act like Jefferson was. I mean, Jefferson effectively came up with some beautiful phrases, and yeah. you don't want to denigrate his efforts. But my goodness, no comparison to John Adams. And I tell John Adams' story in the book. People can make of it what they will, but I think he is an unrecognized giant in the story. And they're finally making an Adams memorial in D.C. to the Adams family. It's to him and Abigail and John Quincy. And, you know, but John Adams is a giant. And I didn't know that until I did the research. I did a lot of research. And it's just when it hit me, it was when I was reading this essay that he wrote in 1765. I thought, this guy is 30 years old and he's writing this essay that's like 10, 11 years before the Declaration of Independence. And he's laying out everything in a way that I never knew that Adams was this kind of a giant. And he's the man who 11 years later, he's the mastermind making independence happen in 1776. Everybody's against it. You know, John Dickinson in Pennsylvania, they're just, we don't need to go there. We just want this. We don't need that. John Adams seems to see this earlier than anybody.
Eric Metaxas with us, his new book, Revolution, The Birth of the Greatest Nation in the History of the World. I love this line. He says, someone would write a play, How England Lost the Colonies, a tragedy in three acts, the Sugar Act, Stamp Act, Declaratory Act. How do we get closer to independence, or how does that begin to push us further away from Britain, those three acts?
Well, yeah, that's me kind of cracking a joke in the book. There are jokes in the book. I think, you know, some of it's funny. But honestly, you see England, basically, they cannot accept the idea that they need to do the right thing. And the right thing is not necessarily going to give them the income that they're hoping from the colonies. But they refuse. And so they try again and again. I mean, the Sugar Act and the Stamp Act. The Stamp Act, that's another favorite part of the book. I mean, the riots, the Stamp Act riots, where the members... the Bostonians in particular, they're like, we're not going to have this. There's no way we're going to just pay this because, like, you're putting a gun to our head like you're thugs. You are not in the right. And so it's a huge moment. And then suddenly England backs off because they realize, oh, well, we can't get our way, so we'll just back off. But they reserve the right to do it anyway. They do this thing, the Declaratory Act, which is just a cynical, cynical law that they pass because it's very corrupt, frankly. And so then they come back with the Townshend Acts, and that eventually leads to, you know, all kinds of pushback from the colonies, and the colonies begin to unite. And then they send troops. And I mean, it's just, it goes from thing to thing to thing. Like, they made this happen. I mean, the King George's government lost the colonies. They did not need to lose the colonies. But, you know, I think it's providential, and I'm glad that it worked out that way. But they didn't need to. They could have kept the colonies for sure.
At some point, the First Continental Congress meets, and you describe this Christian atmosphere and one that they believe their fate is in God's hands. But you also point that I think Adams especially looks around and says, wow, we're really different. There's some tremendous cultural division that's discovered at the First Continental Congress. At some point, are they actually further away when they realize that we're really different around here?
I think it really is. It's a remarkable moment because the colonies never needed to be united. They were always just, you know, I mean, imagine you're in Georgia or South Carolina. What do you have to do with Boston? That's a Puritan, Northern, completely different culture. But because they all felt threatened. They gathered to kind of say, well, what can we do? And I think the differences in the cultures of all these colonies is astonishing. But at the heart of it, and this is, you know, the difference with, let's say, the European Union, when the Finns get together with the Greeks and the Italians, and it's those are deeper cultural divides. Our cultural divides, we were able to unite around common principles that were dearly held principles, at least by enough of the leaders. And so what happens suddenly is they begin to feel this idea of, like, there is a unity here. There's a union here. If we band together, we can succeed. Because they thought Great Britain is going to pick them off one at a time. It's going to crush Boston, then it's going to move on and crush New York. It's going to do whatever it wants. They thought, we can't let that happen. We don't want to be slaves. We don't want to be, we don't want to lose our liberty as free men. They took this so seriously. It's so beautiful. Their innocence in this.
That's Eric Metaxas. More at ericmetaxas.com. His new book is Revolution. We continue our discussion next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Hi, this is Carrie Grawl. This season marks a new chapter for Organic Pilates, a rebirth of sorts in a new, larger downtown space. Alongside it, we want to introduce you to Harmony, a lifestyle boutique created as a natural extension of how we move and live with intention. We want to invite you in. Harmony and Organic Pilates, now open in downtown Reading. We're located at 1264 California Street in between Curated and Theory Coffee. We can't wait to see you.
Open your heart and home to an individual with intellectual and developmental disabilities and become a mentor with our California Mentor Family Home Agency program. We are looking for mentors in Shasta County. As a mentor, you can help an individual in need thrive. Mentors receive a monthly stipend to help cover the cost of care. Call 530-221-9911 or visit ca-mentor.com. That's ca-mentor.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces, crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection. Crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room with bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Look at your home from the street for a second. Now imagine it with rich, fresh color, clean trim, and a finish that looks great in the sunshine. Eagle Eye Painting can make that happen quickly and professionally. Our friendly crew focuses on the details through prep, careful edges, and a job site that's cleaned up when we're done. We're local, licensed, bonded, and insured, and we can walk you through the whole process in English or Spanish. Make this the season your home really stands out. Call Eagle Eye Painting at 530-410-1317 for your free exterior estimate. That's 530-410-1317 or visit 530painter.com.
An I. Most commonly, people mix up they are and they're possessive. Don't do that. These words are two different parts of speech and aren't interchangeable. Tune in next week for the final there, and that's your Grammar Minute. Visit thegrammarminute.com for more tips and tricks.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Eric Metaxas is with us. You can find him at ericmetaxas.com. His brand new book, As We Approach America 250, is Revolution, the Birth of the Greatest Nation in the History of the World. We continue our conversation now. Eric, we jump around a bit in Revolution by Eric Metaxas, the new book. George Washington, when he is described in your book and some other places, it almost seems like a mythical figure. He is taller than everyone else.
Yeah.
He is stronger than everyone else.
Yeah.
And yet, when he takes over, when he becomes commander in chief, he inherits problems, many problems. What does Washington see when he begins his role as commander in chief?
Well, this gets to the cultural issue, right? Washington is a wealthy Virginia planter. He has been in the British army. I mean, he was fighting in the French and Indian War. He now comes up to Boston and he sees a motley ragtag of New Englanders who have very much more egalitarian ideas than the Virginia planter stock. And he's looking around at this ragtag mess. I mean, it's a motley mess. There's no discipline. And there is a level of freedom in the negative sense. They kind of do what they want. They don't have discipline. They're not, So he's thinking, how in the world am I? I've been charged with leading these men. How in the world am I going to do this? And he, there's a scene in there, which to me, some of this is just comedy, right? Like you have him, this giant of a man, and he is dealing with this chaos. And at one point, it's in Cambridge where all of the soldiers are camped out in Cambridge and they're just, hanging out while the British are trapped in Boston and they're marking time, really. It's a stalemate. But this snowball fight breaks out and it's like a brawl between the different factions. I mean, you've got guys, Virginia backwoodsmen up there, and then you've got mariners from the North Shore of Boston, and these are completely different cultures. And so, of course, it's like gangs in a prison. They start fighting and brawling. And Washington rides in, and it's like they all freeze. Again, this is like a comic moment in the book. It's like they all freeze, like Daddy's home, and he caught us, playing with matches. He really is like a living demigod in some ways. I mean, people look at him in awe. You hear this over and over again that there was something about him. It's kind of like Saul, in the Old Testament that, he really looks like a king. I'll tell you, he looks like a king, but Washington didn't want to be a king. That's the difference between him and Saul.
Eric Metaxas with us, his book, Revolution, the Birth of the Greatest Nation in the History of the World. Not everyone, I guess, looked at Washington that way. I love this story. Washington accidentally intercepts this letter between Charles Lee, who already is undermining him any way he can, and his close aide, Joseph Reed, where they're just basically talking bad about her. I was going to use a phrase I shouldn't use on the air.
This is what you have to understand is that, and this is again why the whole story is ultimately a moral story, a spiritual story. Washington was not the greatest military leader. The greatest military leader would have been Charles Lee or Horatio Gates, at least on paper. Why did Congress choose Washington? Or I would say, why did history choose Washington? Why did God choose Washington? Washington is a man of impeccable character. I mean, it is astonishing. Anybody who reads the book, you realize this is an amazing human being. His character is just astonishing. And of course, the two men, Charles Lee and Horatio Gates, they're gunning for his job. They're thinking, we're better than he is, and how come we didn't get the top job? We're going to get it eventually. Of course, Congress will see the light. And so they're sniping behind his back. They're exchanging letters, kind of, trash-talking, like Washington made a mistake, and it's only a matter of time before he's kicked out. And that, to me, is one of the grand stories within the larger story, is the story of his character and their lack of character. Because Horatio Gates and Charles Lee do not come out looking good. And part of my favorite a part of the story toward the end, which I almost couldn't believe, is when you see that both of these guys, Horatio Gates and Charles Lee, who've been kind of double dealing behind Washington's back, both of them dramatically get their comeuppance. And you think, like, if it was in a movie, you'd be like, it's too obvious that they get their comeuppance. They both are humiliated totally separately, you know, apart, a few years apart. But both of these men who thought of themselves as, I should be the top guy, I should get the top job, end up humiliating themselves on the battlefield. And because of their pride, because of their lack of character, humiliating themselves further and losing their reputations further. Because they didn't have the dignity and the humility, frankly, that George Washington did. So it's an amazing character study. I was not, you know, planning to write about that when I was writing this book. I didn't know a lot of this stuff, honestly.
Yeah. Eric Metaxas with us, his book, Revolution. If we go back a little bit, we already mentioned common sense and how it supercharged this movement in early 1776. But you also say about Patrick Henry's speech, the Give Me Liberty speech, that no speech history has recorded ever had quite such an effect. You say the room fell silent for minutes after he finished this speech. You want to compare and contrast a little bit the differences between those two?
Well, I actually, yes, I go out on a limb and I say that I don't think there's an example in the history of the world better than the publication of Common Sense to illustrate the pen is mightier than the sword. I don't think anything written has ever had such an effect as that 47-page pamphlet. It's just outrageous that it really changes history. And it's written by this guy who's been a failure at everything in life, but God kind of gave him the talent and the moment in history to write this extraordinary pamphlet. It's so compelling. And so, but I mean, it just changes history. I don't think there's anything like it in written form that had that power in the way that that did in that moment in history. And the same thing about Patrick Henry's speech. I mean, Patrick Henry was known to be an amazing orator to move the hearts of juries. I mean, he was a lawyer and he had the ability to do that. But when he gives this speech, Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, anybody who was there basically says there's never been anything like it. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, that's a great speech. You know, Dr. King gave a great speech, you know, at the Lincoln Memorial, and Lincoln gave a great speech at Gettysburg, right? But in terms of a speech that in the moment moves people to action, there's probably never been anything like it. It just galvanizes those who heard it in a way that it changes everything. And this is like a month, you know, before Lexington and Concord. Yeah, there's just a lot of amazing history here. And in writing the book, my goal was just like every American needs to know this stuff. Like we're it's going to be on the test. We're responsible for this information. And I think that, you know, it will be inspiring to people. I don't think you can fail to be inspired. And that's why I said, like, we need a book that tells the whole story, you know, because there's all kinds of books. But, like, one book that tells everything in it so you can get it in the 250th year. You can get the story and know the story and live the story. So I am, you know, very, very excited. Very excited. This is an important moment in our history. We actually need to know this. This is not extra credit.
Eric Metaxas is the author of Revolution, The Birth of the Greatest Nation in the History of the World. And yes, that is the United States. It's available now. You can find more also at ericmetaxas.com. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
My privilege. Thank you.
Up next, Batya Ungar Sargon. She is the host of Batya on News Nation. Her brand new book is called The Jews and the Left. We'll talk with her about that next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now, as I've been predicting, thanks to the works of our president, it appears your interest rates are finally on the way down. How will that affect you? Well, I'm joined by Josh Barker with Josh Barker Real Estate.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
What do you think about the great news? What does that mean for the sellers that you're working with?
You know, Sean, I think that the biggest thing is that as interest rates go down, it serves as gravity to value. So as rates go down, the value of homes goes up. And as those rates go up, the value of homes goes down. So as we watch rates going down in the future, we could expect that the asset value of real estate is going to start to go up. So the question is, do you sell now or do you sell later? Do you buy now or you buy later? I would say either way, as long as you're in the market, you're going to receive the benefit.
All right. Thanks for keeping us up to date. Talk to the only agent in town I recommend. Go online to reddinghomes.com. That's Redding, R-E-D-D-I-N-G, homes.com, or just Google Josh Barker. That's Josh Barker, and then you can start packing.
Turtle Bay's glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival is back and better than ever for 2026 at the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with larger-than-life displays of plants and animals from around the world.
Including dinosaurs and icons from ancient Egypt.
Jump on the new Turtle Express for a fun ride through the show.
Glowing Wild is May 1st through June 28th, 7 to 10 p.m. Buy tickets online for the best price at turtlebay.org.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Redding area homeowners, stop being told your only option for your old roof is to buy a new one. Actually, never re-roof it again. Redding, California's Diamond Coat Roof Restoration offers homeowners real, actual restoration that saves tens of thousands of dollars compared to replacements. At Diamond Coat, we offer best of class, American-made, high-performance, clear acrylic barrier systems that actually seal the shingles, lock in the granules, and protect your roof from NorCal's extreme weather. The Diamond Coat is unique and also nothing like the vegetable oil-based restoration being sold in our area. This is an actual invisible barrier designed specifically to protect your shingle roof, not just make it look newer. These are hard times, and restoring your roof, over replacing it at a third of the cost, is without a doubt one of the best investments you can make in 2026. Call 530-941-9035. 530-941-9035 or visit www.diamond-coat.com.
Stay informed with our county's most reliable news. Tune to KCNR every Monday at 6:35 a.m. for the Town Hall Brief during the Sue McClain News Hour. Known for its unbiased reporting, the Town Hall Brief provides precise, local-only updates and compelling discussions critical to our community. Have a lead? Email townhallbriefs@gmail.com or reach out via socials at townhallbrief on linktree.com to send a DM. The Town Hall Brief, the authoritative source for Shasta County News, Monday mornings at 6:35 on KCNR.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out more Hillsdale College audio at the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. Find episodes of this program, plus The Larry Aaron Show, Imprimis, and the Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast, podcast.hillsdale.edu, or wherever you get your audio. We're joined now by Batya Ungar-Sargon. She's a weekend anchor and host of Batya on News Nation, a frequent contributor to the New York Post, a columnist for the Free Press as well, and the author of the new book, The Jews and the Left. Batya, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Another interesting and informative new book, The Jews and the Left. You say early in this book, the stark reality is that America is that most Jews are Democrats, yet the left has turned on the Jews. And the book tries to answer the why of both parts of that equation. But I want to start with something else, which is this explanation that you have early that instead of religious fervor, that American Jews are deeply connected to the idea of Jewish peoplehood. How and should that affect the way that we understand this question?
Wow, what a beautiful question. Yeah, I have that in there because I think it's hard sometimes for Christians to understand this about Jews, that most Jews, when they moved here, and this continues to be the case, they saw in America this idea of freedom, which for many Jews who had been Orthodox in the old country, Orthodoxy is a heavy lift. Mm-hmm. It's like a religion of laws, which I could tell you was an Orthodox woman, you know, it's constant. And a lot of Jews saw the freedom of America as a freedom from that, those religious constrictions, but that didn't mean that they stopped identifying as Jews, even though they stopped observing the law. And that is because to them, being Jewish was something more complex than just a faith. It had to do with an ethnicity, a shared history, a shared culture, the values that were in the Bible that the founding fathers actually relied on when writing our rights and freedoms and the idea that they were imbued in us by God. So it's more complicated than just a religion. And this is so crucial to this conversation because you have a lot of people on the left saying, well, we're not against Jews. We're just against Israel. We're not anti-Semitic. We're just anti-Zionist. Mm-hmm. The problem is for the vast majority of Jews, a connection to other Jews is basically their religion. That is their faith. And that means that they are very pro-Jewish and pro-Israel. 85%, 90% of Jews worldwide are Zionists. So when you say there's no room in our movement for Zionism, but there is room for Jews, what you're saying is, you know, the 10% who are the token anti-Zionists you will accept, but those are the ones willing to turn on the 90%.
All right, we're going to come back to that. I want to dig through some of the past and some of the history included in the Jews and the left to the first part of that question. Why are most Jews Democrats? It begins with the history of the labor movement, the Jewish birth of labor, and this horrific description of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. And in the aftermath, you certainly can understand why Jews see the rise of the labor movement as very much connected to them and their sacrifice. But you say that then it gets extended, and that Jews see the New Deal and FDR as a phoenix rising from the incinerated bodies of these innocent little girls. So how does this feeling of the labor movement get extended to FDR and democratic politics of the age?
So Jews really birthed the labor movement at the turn of the 20th century. There were about a million Jewish immigrants from Russia fleeing pogroms and anti-Semitism. And they arrived here dirt poor, and a lot of them ended up in the needle trades because you didn't need to speak English in order to work in them. And they would work these just bruising, you know, 16-hour days, hunched over in poor light, you know, working away, creating ready-made clothing. The working conditions were horrible. They were horribly exploited most of the time by other Jews who had arrived sometimes just 5 years earlier and managed, because of the amazing capitalism of America, to amass a little bit of capital and then to open their own sweatshop. Mm-hmm. So there was this cycle to where Jews would come, they would be proletariats, but they would not stay proletariat. They would sometimes within 5, 10, 15, they would already become, you know, their own factory owners and then be able to send their children to college. So what that did was it created within the Jewish community a very intense respect for labor, but also a very healthy appreciation for capitalism. So you had this funny situation in the 20s and the 30s where you would have, you know, like local branches of like the Socialist Party, and it would be all professional Jews who were like dentists and doctors, you know. And basically, you know, they created the socialist movement in America and then they killed it off because it didn't reflect their values and their situation. What they saw in the New Deal and in FDR was that combination of the dignity of labor and a healthy respect for capitalism, those two things going hand in hand.
Batya Ungar Sargon is with us, her new book, The Jews and the Left. We move forward to World War II. You point out that this war, the entry of the U.S. into the war, led to a spiritual embrace of FDR, turning democratic politics into a religious imperative. Is it appropriate to compare that feeling to what we see from much of the left today, where they too have traded religion for politics, that same fervor?
It's a really good question. I don't know that it's quite fair because FDR really was, he was seen as having defeated the Nazis. And mm-hmm. of course to Jews, this was like utterly existential. I will tell you an interesting story. In my synagogue, I sit next to a Holocaust survivor. It's an immense privilege. She's amazing, Toby Levy. And she told me that when she spent the war in hiding behind a false wall in a barn in the Ukraine, she was rescued by, her whole family was rescued there by their non-Jewish neighbor. And they went to a DP camp after the war, and then they came here and they moved to New Orleans. And her story about encountering the South under Jim Crow, having just experienced that basically as a Jew in Europe, is fascinating, and it's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And she, well, another thing she told me that was in the book that I've never seen reported anywhere else was when she arrived here, you know, the European Jews did not think that highly of FDR. He had not done quite as much as he should have to rescue Jews. He had a very anti-Semitic State Department,
mm-hmm.
and they basically put the kibosh on allowing Jews in. But the Jews in America did not know that, and they just worshipped the ground FDR walked on. And Toby told me once, she said, you know, we got here and we thought this was the man who let our families burn to death. And they're sitting here telling us how amazing he is. And at first we tried to say to them, you know, he's not all that great. And then she told me, but we quickly learned to keep those views to ourselves.
Around this time, there's a little side story in the Jews and the left about Henry Ford. And Henry Ford publishing the Dearborn Independent with these anti-Semitic screeds. And he's trying to run for office. And you point out that even in 1921, going full anti-Semitic was political suicide. As we move to current days, are Democrats today about to learn that same lesson, or have circumstances changed?
I think they did just learn it in Texas with this Maureen Galino,
mm-hmm.
Who went full anti-Semite and said she wants to put American Zionists into internment camps. She had won her primary by 29%, and the next nearest guy, Johnny Garcia, got 27%, so they went to a runoff because of the way Texas works. In the primary, she had not talked about Jews, and she spent the next 3 months between the primary and the runoff, March to May, talking about how much she hates Jews in Israel and Zionists and wants to treat them and put them in internment camps. And lo and behold, she just lost her runoff by 30 points. So I do think that that rule is still hard and fast and true. You cannot go full anti-Semite in America and maintain mainstream appeal. I do not think Tucker Carlson will be at the next RNC. I've been really heartened to see how the right
mm-hmm.
has marginalized just anti-Semitic voices rising on the far right. People who used to be MAGA and now are basically, in my view, leftists. But even on the left, I think, you know, the Democratic voters really rejects it. There's something, Scott, in the soil of this great nation that rejects Jew hate. And that is what my book is about. It is a love song to the United States of America.
Batya Ungar Sargon is with us. Her new book is The Jews and the Left. We continue our discussion in a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Goldleaf Nursery Spring Sale is on now. 20% off all 1 gallon and larger, all the way up to 24 inch box trees. Growing better plants since 1975. Third generation family owned. Big fruit trees, many with fruit on them. A huge selection of citrus trees, all on sale, 20% off. Spring has sprung and it's time to plant color. And we have a huge selection of flowering perennials. Ladybugs have arrived. The good bugs. If you're overrun with mosquitoes, we have plenty of mosquito plants in stock to keep those pests away. All our hanging baskets are planted with year after year perennials for long blooming season. Don't miss our spring sale, 20% off all 1 gallon and larger. Can't find what you're looking for? We special order at a discount price. Gold Leaf Nursery. Come by and check us out on Churn Creek Road, 1/4 mile from Airport Road and Dersh Road, across from Club Tucker Golf Course.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive is a major supplier of electrical and electronic products for the industrial and construction markets. North Valley Distributing focuses on quality and reliability. Their products include fuses, batteries, wiring devices, connectors, lighting solutions, circuit protection components, and electrical tools and more. North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive, a proud sponsor of the Reading Colt 45s.
Since 1934, Grange Co-op has been more than just a store. We've been a cornerstone of our community, owned by people like you. We proudly offer top quality farm and ranch supplies, including our own Rogue feed, as well as workwear, western apparel, garden essentials, and pet care products. By signing up as a Grange Rewards customer, you not only enjoy exclusive benefits like special offers and 1% back on most purchases, but you also become part of something bigger, a cooperative that you own and help shape. Join Grange Rewards today.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to follow us on X at Hillsdale Radio for updated show and guest information. We continue with Batya Ungar Sargon. She is the author of The Jews and the Left. You can also find her weekends on Newsmax hosting Batya. Batya, speaking of rejecting Jew hate, we move to the 1960s, and you say, when the Klan came for the Jews, the South turned on the Klan, these firebombing of synagogues in the South of the 1960s. How did this play out?
This is one of the most beautiful and undercovered stories that I discovered while writing my book. On at least three occasions, when the Klan firebombed synagogues in the South in the 50s and 60s, the white Christians were so horrified and disgusted that the Klan would come for their Jewish neighbors who they held in such high esteem that they turned on the Klan and started to actually ease the way for civil rights for their black neighbors because they wanted to be distanced from the Klan. Their love of their Jewish neighbors open them up to accepting civil rights for blacks. It's just the most incredible and beautiful story. And it's just amazing because nobody had been convicted in the South for lynching until the synagogue in Atlanta was firebombed. And then the murderers of Mickey Schwerner and Andy Goodman and James Chaney were found guilty for the first time. I mean, it's just utterly incredible what that tells you about how your average Southern white person who was a segregationist felt about their Jewish neighbors, so protective that it changed the way they thought about race in general because they did not want to be on the same side as the people who would firebomb a synagogue. I think that chapter for me was the one that really opened my eyes and that I really hope will land because, you know, it's common to think that in the Jewish community that it was the Northern Jews who did all the activism and the Southern Jews who basically agreed with the segregationists. And it's just so not true. They just, in the South, the Jews had a much different view of their neighbors and they understood what would actually help them get there where we all wanted to get in terms of equality for all Americans. And it's just so beautiful and subtle. And so much of the reporting is based on these interviews with Reform rabbis in the South that were embargoed for 25 years so that they could speak the truth. And they are just so incredible.
Batya, if we sort of transition to the second part of that question you're answering, so we talk a bit about why the Jews became devoted Democrats and now why the left turned on them. And this begins in chapter six with a introduction discussion about this French historian Foucault
and his ideas behind power dynamics. I think it is, without perhaps getting too deep, I think it's important to lay out these ideas and to how they've influenced so much of the left over these past few decades. So who's Foucault? What does he say about power?
So Foucault was a French philosopher who had this view that there was no such thing as absolute truth, facts, right versus wrong, true versus false. There was only the way in which institutions, whether it's the medical institution, academia, whether it's the judicial system, the government, they shape reality based on power. So these institutions have power, and they create what look like categories of true versus false or right versus wrong in order to control people. So what he basically did was he threw out this distinction, the Judeo-Christian distinction in the Bible that this country was founded on, that, you know, there's a difference between right and wrong, good versus evil, that we should strive to be good. And he said, no, that whole rubric is just a way that institutions try to control us and exert power on us against the powerless. And it is impossible to overestimate how intense the impact of this worldview was on the American left. Now, of course, this is, it, you could see this everywhere. It's been like utterly mainstreamed throughout, not just the left in academia and activist circles, but it's utterly mainstream. You cannot watch CNN for 10 minutes without hearing somebody speaking who's been influenced in this way of thinking, because it suffused the academy, and then we created an economy in which to have any kind of influence in America or power, really even the American dream, you have to have a college degree. And the longer you spend in academia and the more degrees you amass, the richer you get and the more influence you have in America. That was true for a very long time, I think until Trump arrived on the scene, which is why he's so important, in my view. And so what you had was basically anyone with any relevance in America, the longer you spent in academia, the more time you spent exposed to this Foucauldian worldview, which had taken over the humanities and the social sciences. And, of course, in order to get a law degree or a medical degree, you have to go through all of this schooling. The longer you spent exposed to Foucault, the more successful you were likely to be. And these ideas, this idea that there's no right versus wrong, there's only powerful versus powerless, oppressor versus oppressed, and the oppressor is inherently evil, and the oppressed have no moral responsibilities, and this is key. This rubric, this dichotomy explains everything that seems utterly incomprehensible about the godlessness on the left today.
Batya Ungar Sargon is with us. The Jews and the Left is her book. In the aftermath of October 7th, 2023, you read about these protests on college campuses we all saw and heard, and the prevalence of them happening in campuses where there are very few Pell Grants, where the acceptance rate is very low, these elite institutions, and these students are pro, not just pro-Palestine, but pro-Hamas, because they have found a cause that could erase their privilege. Is the explanation of what we saw on those campuses as simple as that?
I think so. I mean, there was this amazing scene in one of the libraries at Columbia where they occupied the library and they arrested a whole bunch of kids there, students, and one of the students was the daughter of the actors Maggie Gyllenhaal and Peter Sarsgaard, who, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, Maggie Gyllenhaal is Jewish. And, like, that is just, like, that is the perfect encapsulation of this. That is, like, the apotheosis of this phenomenon. It's if you have privilege because you are that rich and that, you know, set up and the nepo baby of famous parents and what have you, because of this Foucauldian binary, you have no access to virtue. You have no access to moral authority except by ceding it to some oppressed group. They have oppression envy. And this is how they slake that thirst, is by masquerading as the oppressed, by literally putting on a keffiyeh.
One more question for Batya Ungar Sargon, because you talk about class often, and I'm curious, as we you know, like the back half of this book is about this oppressor-oppressed dynamic. When we talk about class in America, Is there a way to do it in which it does not devolve into the sort of leftist construction of oppressor and oppressed? The rich are the oppressors, the middle class, the low class are the oppressed. Can we talk about class in a way in which our discussions don't devolve into that construction?
We can when working class Americans have access to the American dream. We can't when they don't. You know, if things get significantly worse, you're going to hear a lot more of that class warfare stuff entering the lexicon, and it's going to be bipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
I think, to me, what Trump represented was the rise of labor in a way that was uniquely capitalistic. So the idea that you could protect the interests of labor and the fortunes of the working class within the free market, the constraints of a free market, a national free market. You know, he doesn't believe in free trade internationally, and I kind of agree with him. if the economy doesn't turn around soon, people will stop seeing him as representing that, and things will get worse, and the left will have a better language for speaking about that, even though I don't think that their model is where most working class people are at.
Mm-hmm.
Working class people don't want handouts. They want better wages. And if you're offering them better wages, they will take that. But if they can't put food on the table, and I know families that are currently skipping meals, they'll take the handout. So, and that is something that I want the right to understand.
Yeah. You can read a bit more about that in Baccia's previous book, Second Class, which is also available now. The new one, though, is The Jews and the Left. Baccia Ungar-Sargon is weekend anchor and host of Baccia on News Nation, a contributor to the New York Post and columnist for the Free Press as well. Baccia, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
God bless and protect you. Thank you so much for having me.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Eric Metaxas and Baccia Ungar-Sargon. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Every drive tells a story. Morning commutes, weekend getaways, road trips that stretch for miles. That's why you need Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading. At Quick and Clean Car Wash, you'll receive a detailed hand scrub pre-clean, a gentle soft cloth wash, and a personal towel dry brings out a smooth, polished shine. Fast, affordable, starting at only $12. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing.
But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.